You are now listening to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast with Dr. Taylor Crick. Dr. Taylor is an expert in helping those suffering with autoimmune disease, and he himself has autoimmune disease. Autoimmunity is rampant today. The purpose of this podcast is to educate about the underlying causes and natural solutions to halt autoimmune disease progression. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. For more information from Dr. Taylor, visit www.autoimmuneeducationacademy.com. Without further ado, here's your host, Dr. Taylor Crick.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Taylor Crick, and I love teaching and explaining the underlying mechanisms behind autoimmunity and chronic disease. For more information, visit our website at autoimmuneeducationacademy.com and check out our YouTube channel, which you can also find on that website. All my YouTube videos, I have two YouTube channels. And some of those are going to be relevant to today's conversation, which is about mold and autoimmunity. So if you did not listen to the last episode, I talked about mold and how I had just got really sick and how I've experienced mold in different, you know, mold toxicity is part of my history, part of my autoimmunity. And I believe it's the driver of my Hashimoto's. Today, I'm going to talk about mold and autoimmunity and just go through the mechanisms, go through all the stuff. And on those YouTube channels, though, I review several of the studies and you know, some relevant things like that, or just dig in a little bit further if this is a topic that you're interested in. Mold toxicity is crazy. And I'm obsessed with it. I always have been, or not always, but, you know, before just getting sick recently. But I've always helped a lot of mold people and seen a lot of mold people. But I think even more recently, it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. The stories that we hear, the people that are coming to our office from all over the country and locally here in my town. And it's just, it's wild. And the research on it is insane. So I love following the literature, following the research. And so some of those videos, again, are on the YouTube channel. So today's topic is mold and autoimmunity. So let me just start by saying that mold is absolutely associated with autoimmunity. Now, when we talk about mold too, just to backtrack a little bit, mold is one thing and mycotoxins are a whole nother thing. So their mold is like spores and hyphae. Hyphal stages, and mycotoxins are toxins that are released by mold. So when I say mold, I'm kind of referring to mold toxicity overall. And I'll explain, you know, just some of those things because, you know, it goes by several different names and et cetera. So, but mold is absolutely associated with autoimmunity. So I want to start there. And the other thing that I want to say before I keep going too is that what I'm going to do today is really more of a dive into the immunology, because I'm going to start with just saying, hey, mold is absolutely associated with autoimmunity. Which ones? Virtually all of them are possible from a mechanism standpoint, because what I'm going to get into is just how much of an immune disruptor mold is. Mold is considered the master antigen, so it just disrupts the immune system in a myriad of different ways. So combined with different genetics, combined with different experiences, could lead to a lot of different immune system problems, including cancer. Molds and mycotoxins are absolutely known carcinogens. But anyway, mold is associated with anti-nuclear antibodies, so ANA diseases like lupus and mixed connective tissue disease. It's associated with liver autoimmunity. It's associated with thyroid autoimmunity. It's associated with rheumatoid arthritis, rheumatoid factors. And it's associated with neurological autoimmunity in several different ways. So many different neurological antibodies, certainly relevant, but also with neurological autoimmune disease like MS. And there's certainly some connection that's been made between those two, not necessarily as a causation. You know, causation is the wrong word, but there's absolutely an increase in demyelinating antibodies, and there's absolutely, you know, some compelling papers. You know, I have one pulled up in front of me here. It's called Fungal Toxins and MS. And this is just one example, but it's just an opinion piece, but she's just talking about, or Let's see who it is. Yeah, it's Catherine Przinski and Daniel Shane out of Rutgers. And they're just talking, it's in Brain Bulletin Research, and it's just something that I was looking up of fungal toxins in MS, a compelling connection. So there's certainly some association out there, again, not causation, but a lot of neuro things and a lot of newer research out about neuroantibodies too, a lot of more like obscure neuroantibodies or things like, you know, adrenergic receptors, catecholamine receptors, acetylcholine receptors, different neurotransmitter receptors. So anyway, I'm digressing, but there are a lot of different mechanisms and a lot of different autoimmunities and a lot of different antibodies that could be a part of mold and mycotoxins. So because of all this, this podcast is going to be a pretty deep review of immunology, because when you can understand the immunology, you can understand why mold is basically the worst thing that's out there. And I don't want to list stats or read research to you. So again, check the YouTube channel if you want to see some of the citations or if you want to check out the mold literature. You know, it's out there. And I'll link a couple in the show notes. I think I linked a couple in the last one as well. But yeah, so first I want to start with innate versus adaptive immune system. So the innate versus the adaptive immune system. The adaptive is the one that's involved in autoimmunity. So that gets the most fame in autoimmunity, you know, T cells and a T cell mediated attack and, you know, your self tissue antibodies and stuff. That's all the adaptive. The innate immune system is the first to respond, and it really runs the show. So it's all the white blood cells, it's cytokines, it's chemokines, it's inflammation, you know, it's inflammation the second that you scrape your knee, right up until like the scar heals and the macrophages come in and clean up tissue debris and resolution occurs. And, you know, the innate system is always involved. It's neutrophils, it's macrophages, there's mast cells, there's complement activation, toll-like receptors, you know, there's a myriad of different things there. Now, the adaptive immune system is, again, it's autoimmunity. And this is when the body remembers. So it's like you get chickenpox as a kid and, you know, you don't get chickenpox anymore and your body remembers that. Or you get COVID or you get a COVID vaccine and your body produces antibodies so that it remembers that and attacks that when it sees it again. These are T and B lymphocytes. That includes things like memory cells, T memory cells, B memory cells, memory B cells, and suppressor cells and helper cells and so forth. So B helper, T helper. And again, the T helper are the ones that are really famous in autoimmunity. And I have a whole podcast episode about TH1, TH2, Tregs, and TH17, which is super, 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 super relevant, you know, in the context of this conversation. So the problem is that, you know, molds and mycotoxins can do both. So you see different presentations all the time that one could be more on the innate side. And let's say that somebody has a neutrophil percentage of 75, and that's maybe more innate, maybe TH17. Yeah, it might be multiple mechanisms to that, but just in general, more of an innate inflammatory response versus somebody that has a lymphocyte percentage of 45 and a neutrophil percentage of 43. And so that's going to be a different swing, and that you're going to expect that to maybe be more of an autoimmune presentation, more antibodies may be associated with that. And again, this is really, really big picture, but mold can do both of those. The other thing is, the mycotoxins are immunosuppressive, so they often suppress the immune system in many, many ways. So it's a really tricky combination, and there's a myriad of different combos, which is why it's really hard to research this. It's really hard to study this. There's many different names. There's many different mechanisms. To prove causation is basically a futile attempt because there's just so many things involved. But again, you take people that have been exposed to dampness microbiota, or the microbiota that's commonly found in damp places, which is moldy, or water damaged buildings, and you get them into prolonged exposure, and they're going to have immune abnormalities, including autoimmunity, and again, including cancer. Aflatoxin B1 is highly carcinogenic, and so are many other factors involving this. So anyway, I'm going to go through kind of a list of things that are just kind of facts that I just wrote down. And again, it's just kind of crazy. So, I'm reading my notes, but it says why it can get confusing really fast. And again, this is confusing, but we have mold. So that's spores, that's breathing in spores. That's spores, you know, irritating your sinuses and your lungs, or it's fungal colonization, which is kind of the hyphal form where it kind of takes roots in your sinuses, in your gut. There's biofilms involved, and you could have one of those, or you could have the other of those, or you could have both of those. And then you have mycotoxins, which you could have that and colonization and exposure, or you could have one of any of them, or et cetera, like at prolonged exposure, you could have mycotoxins from it. And mycotoxins store in the cells indefinitely. So you could have mycotoxins from two homes ago, and then you have a fungal overgrowth from one home ago when you know, had a sinus infection and went on steroids or something and were immunosuppressed for a little bit. And you can see how really quickly the story can get really, really confusing without a really, really, really good detective going and looking for all these clues and kind of piecing this together. Okay, so because mold is ubiquitous, it's everywhere. Everybody on Earth breathes, every human on Earth breathes 100 to 200 spores of Aspergillus fumigatus every single day. And so the body is really trying really hard to tolerate mold. So, that's an argument that a lot of people will give is like, well, mold is everywhere. So like, how can it be that bad? Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And your body can tolerate a certain amount of it. You're absolutely right. But what if you are exposed to more than your body can tolerate? I just had my house tested, and my house is very, very old. It's built in 1858. And the testing guy that I use, who's awesome, he was really impressed with a lot of things in the house. There were some problems, and I'll talk about that in a different episode. But the problems were the things that I already knew. Like, there's carpet there that we've started ripping up. And if you listen to my last episode, when we started ripping the carpet up is when my symptoms began. And we know that carpet probably has mold from like three owners ago, we knew that was kind of a problem. We thought we were mitigating it and being smart, but we weren't being smart enough. So I'm sure that that's going to be a problem. But really, the structure of the house is really good. And I see a ton of people whose homes are built in the last 20 years, So now we build things with drywall, we build things airtight, So mold is ubiquitous. The body's trying really hard to tolerate. And so because of that, sometimes it can build up in the background until the body decides to not tolerate it anymore. And the bottom kind of falls out on your health. So that's one thing, is that, you could be exposed to it for a really long time. Or one person in a family can be exposed to it. Let's say the wife and the husband is still tolerating it, and he maybe leaves every morning and goes to work, or maybe it's vice versa, whatever. But, and I have couples that I see that are this exact situation. And then there's genetics too. So there's a lot of different reasons for that. But anyway, mold is ubiquitous, so the body's trying really hard to tolerate it. Mold toxicity is diagnosed as several names. So it's hard to search the literature, and it's hard to, have congruency with studies. There's sick building syndrome. There's dampness and mold hypersensitivity syndrome. There's chronic inflammatory response syndrome. There's mixed mold mycotoxicosis. There's a variety of other names. There's aspergillosis. There's invasive aspergillosis, which is very, dangerous. There's more of a delayed sensitivity that could be like a hypersensitivity pneumonitis that's going to be mold mediated. There's, chronic sinusitis that's going to be mold mediated. There's all kinds of different diagnoses that can be put on this. So, and then many mycotoxins suppress the immune system, which leads to pathogen invasion and infection, which can then lead to autoimmunity, as we've talked about in past episodes, things like Epstein-Barr virus, things like cytomegalovirus, things like strep staph, Yersinia, C. diff, et cetera. Mold can cleave, like scissors cleave tight junction proteins, which opens up your barrier. So leaky gut, leaky sinuses, leaky lung, and it opens up the gateway for autoimmunity. Now, this isn't actually in my notes, but it should be. But so mold also depletes, mycotoxins deplete glutathione in a dose-dependent fashion. I mean, the more mycotoxins, the more it depletes glutathione. And especially in the tissues of the sinuses and the lungs, which have the most glutathione of any tissue in the body and do the most cytochrome P450 activity. That's the most kind of basically detoxification of any tissue in the body, including the liver. So I thought that that's amazing. The liver's bigger and does more detox, per pound for pound. But those barriers, opening up those barriers, depleting glutathione, that's also their mechanism of entry. The gut is one way they get in for sure, but the sinuses and the lungs, these are largely inhaled particles, especially the mycotoxins and the mold toxins. The Stachybotrys, which is black mold, it releases toxic droplets, water droplets in a certain amount of humidity that travel in the air that are 1,000 times more toxic than the spore itself. So, and that's direct from the literature. So, and that's also what happens with mold is I can just, I can digress and just like kind of go through the archive of literature that is in my brain. Mold can trigger mast cells. So, we have a past episode about mast cells. Mast cells are very fascinating, and molds can trigger mast cells through several mechanisms. There's a couple really good papers on this. Molds and mycotoxins can both trigger mast cells. So one of the mechanisms is through toll-like receptors. Those are pattern recognition receptors, and they're part of the innate immune system, okay? So then we're going to activate these PRRs and these toll-like receptors, and it's going to lead to an inflammatory cascade, mast cell degranulation, an inflammatory cascade that's going to turn on things like NF-kappa-B, which is just inflammation. And let me stick with the mast cells, I guess. Another one is, so that's the innate immune system, toll-like receptors. Another one is IgE, which is the most common mast cell-mediated thing. That's true allergy. And that's actually fairly rare with mold. So a lot of times you go to an ENT or an allergist, and it's like, oh, you don't have an allergy to mold. You're crazy. And when I first got sick with mold, this is exactly what I did is I went and ran labs, was like, this has got to be mold. Like, how could this not be mold? And in hindsight, too, I don't think I talked about this on the last episode. The first time that I remember getting sick, it was 2016, and I got really sick, nasal polyp sick. And I had friends come into town to Salt Lake from Oregon, and we laid outside in the leaves, literally laid in the leaves. It was a beautiful day, and like drank a couple beers and laid in the leaves, and I got really, really sick. And then I had a mast cell attack or like histamine thing, because then I remember it was 2016, because the Cubs won it all, and I drank champagne, and I think it was maybe the first time I ever had to go on steroids. My nose blew up, and I got nasal polyps, and I think that might have been the very first time. And I did a mold IgE test, and it was negative. So anyway, that's one of the ways that it can do it. And it's probably the least likely. And then there's IgG, which is really, really common, which can trigger mast cells through IgG. But there's non-IgE mast cell degranulation. So that's a third way, or maybe fourth, that mold can trigger mast cells. Maybe fifth, if you throw in the mycotoxins as well. But yeah, I have a paper in my hand right here that says Aspergillus fumigatus induces IgE-independent mast cell degranulation. So the name kind of says it all, that it's not always IgG, it's not always true allergy. And so allergists and ENTs don't really look past IgE, but they're not familiar with most of the literature, I would say. Molds activate complement pathways. So the raised C3, C4 protein activate complement, which would make it inflammatory. It's an innate mechanism. And yeah, that's common in like a chronic inflammatory response syndrome panel, like a Sears panel, a Shoemaker trained panel. We're going to look at complement proteins. I don't, because they're really expensive. And a lot of the Shoemaker panels are, or like markers are, and I'm a cash practice. So like MSH is just really expensive. I look at TGF-beta a lot. I look at a lot of, you know, other inflammatory markers, but those are some C3, C4 that I don't look at very often. I do sometimes in mold and Lyme type stuff. Mycotoxins activate inflammasome. So NLRP3, inflammasome, turn on inflammasome activation, especially like trichothecines from toxic black mold. That's a type of mycotoxin. Molds and mycotoxins can turn on NF-kappa B. I already mentioned that. That's a self-reinforcing inflammatory cycle that once it gets turned on, sometimes it doesn't get turned off. They can activate cytokine-inducible nitric oxide synthase, iNOS, and the no-ONO cycle, which is the nitric oxide peroxynitrite cycle. That's a mouthful. But you have reactive oxygen species from mold. And you have reactive nitrogen species from mold. It's just all the different mechanisms. And neutrophil recruitment, you know, the things. So then on the adaptive side, on the autoimmune side, things are equally as interesting. So I already mentioned that molds and mycotoxins deplete glutathione, which, again, disrupts the barriers. So the sinuses, the lungs, the gut barriers, but then begins shifting the T-cell dominance towards Th2 dominance. And mold drives a Th2 dominance in a big way, because one of its pathogen evasion strategies is Th1 kills mold. So it suppresses Th1 and boosts Th2. So you get a lot of people with ENT symptoms, sinus, lung, and it's not always fungal colonization. And sometimes it's SIBO, sometimes it's staph, sometimes it's Marcon, sometimes other biofilm type producing infections that are on these hollow spaces, the sinuses, the gut, the lungs. So sometimes not always fungal colonization, or even, you know, Candida is really common with mold, but it's not always Aspergillus, you know, invasive Aspergillus, but it's that mold still suppressed the immune system in a way, or triggered inflammation in a way that, you know, allowed the proliferation of these things, if that is not too much. So Th2 dominance decreases Th1, and Th1 kills mold. Mold also drives Th17, which is tissue-damaging autoimmune inflammation. And so as somebody's tipped towards Th2 dominance, it's going to suppress Th1, and that can also drive this Th17, which is the worst of them all, and that's the tissue-damaging inflammation. So again, that's very, very common in mold, is that there's just this chronic inflammatory response syndrome. There's tissue-damaging autoimmune inflammation that is rampant, and the suppression of Th1, which allows for more infectious burden. Again, the Epstein-Barrs, the cytomegaloviruses, the Lyme, the other things, because that immune system is suppressed and it doesn't clear out pathogens and it doesn't do pathogen surveillance as much. Mold drives B-cell abnormalities. I think we already touched on that. And then self-tissue antibodies are more common. So I'm going to touch on a couple more things. The neuro ones are really, really interesting. So one thing, molds and mycotoxins are associated with myalgic encephalitis and chronic fatigue syndrome, sinusitis, allergies and hypersensitivities, type 1, type 2, and type 3 hypersensitivities, a breakdown in the gut and blood-brain barriers, mixed connective tissue disease, lupus, polyneuropathy, autoimmune inner ear disease. Here's a study. This is a graph, and it's modified. And this is an old study, but this is how long this has been known for. And Dr. Vigidani, who's the director of Cyrex Labs and Immunosciences Labs, has been studying this, you know, for 20 years. the immunology of this and the antibodies and looking at people that have been exposed to mold and just looking at some of their antibody responses. So comparing somebody that's like controls, healthy controls compared to mold, I'm looking at a chart right now that's really interesting, and there's ANAs, and the mold people are around 30%, and the controls are probably around 2% have ANA IgGs. Here's antibodies against smooth muscle. The mold are probably double. Here's antibodies against myelin in the central nervous system. And the mold people are up near 65, 70%. And the controls are down around 11 to 12% probably. Same thing with IgM for the myelin, demyelinating antibodies, myelin basic protein. And same thing for the IgA. They're all really similar. Now, this one's another one. It's myelin basic protein, azial ganglioside. I think this is oligodendrocyte or something like that. Here's tubulin, neurofilament protein. Neurofilament protein is associated with Alzheimer's, tubulin. So they're all, like, again, just equally drastic. You know, you look at these graphs, so blue is controls, and they're all real little. You know, the highest one is maybe 12% of the ones that I named. The rest of them are all below. Of the red lines, the lowest one is 30%. The highest is tubulin at almost 70%. But there's drastically more neurological antibodies in these people that have been mold exposed. Now, this is an older study, but this is, you know, in current literature as well. And again, some newer different antibodies, you know, other than demyelinating. But, you know, things, again, like I mentioned, like, first off, dopamine receptor things, PANDAS type things, and like catecholamine receptors, beta adrenergic receptors, alpha adrenergic receptors, different things in the limbic and brainstem regions. And there's just a lot going on in the brain of these exposed people. Now, here's one thing, another thing I wanted to read was the mycotoxins and some of their effects. So I'm just going to read from some of our labs that we run all the time. Again, this is all throughout the literature, but the labs do a pretty good job of compiling this. So I'm just going to go through them. Aflatoxin M1. So aflatoxin is a very common mycotoxin. It's from Aspergillus. So I'm just going to read this from Great Plains Lab. Aflatoxin M1 is the main metabolite of aflatoxin B1, which is a mycotoxin produced by the mold species Aspergillus. Aflatoxins are some of the most carcinogenic substances in the environment. Aflatoxin susceptibility is dependent on multiple factors such as age, sex, and diet. Aflatoxin's main source is water damage in buildings. Aflatoxin can also be found in beans, corn, rice, tree nuts, wheat, milk, eggs, and meat. I would add into that coffee, you know, anything stored in bulk. Coffee's a big one. This is how bulletproof coffee began, because molds are common in coffees. So Dave Asprey had mold toxicity and started Bulletproof Coffee. So huge fan of that company in general. That's the only kind I drink. Aflatoxin can lead to liver damage, cancer, mental impairment, abdominal pain, hemorrhaging, coma, death. Aflatoxin has been shown to inhibit leukocyte proliferation, inhibit white blood cell proliferation. That is not good. And that's anti-inflammatory, but that's not good. You want white blood cells to respond to things. Clinical signs of aflatoxicosis are non-pruritic macular rash, headache, GI dysfunction that's often extreme, lower extremity edema, anemia, and jaundice. Treatment should include, oh, I'm going to skim. Aflatoxin is removed through the glutathione S transferase system. This system can conjugate activated aflatoxin with reduced glutathione. That's plenty for that. So here's some that are more immunosuppressive. Gliotoxin. Gliotoxin is produced by Aspergillus. Aspergillus spreads in the environment by releasing conida, which are capable of infiltrating the small airways. In order to evade the body's defenses, Aspergillus releases gliotoxin to inhibit the immune system. So it's a defense mechanism to try to evade the immune system that Aspergillus releases. One of the targets of gliotoxin is this thing in the immune system. I'm not going to say it. This results in the downregulation of phagocytic immune defense, which can lead to the exacerbation of polymicrobial infections. That basically means that it shuts down immune function and leads to the exacerbation of infections that you already have. Gliotoxin impairs the activation of T cells and induces apoptosis in monocytes, which will become macrophages, and in monocyte-derived dendritic cells. Monocytes can also become dendritic cells. These impairments to dendritic cells can lead to multiple neurological syndromes. So that one's immunosuppressive and can affect the brain in a really major way. And then let's see, citrinin. Citrinin is a mycotoxin that is produced by Aspergillus, Penicillin, and Monascus. Citrinin has been shown to be carcinogenic in rat studies. Multiple studies have linked citrinin exposure to a suppression of the immune response. Here is Verucarin, VCA we call it, or VRA, or VCA, I've seen it. It's a trichothecine, so it's one of the trichothecines. That means it's produced by Stachybotrys. These are crazy names. If you're just listening, it's crazy names. So whatever, maybe I should just stop. But the primary tissues affected are the intestinal and gastric mucosa. Bone marrow and spleen causes damage to human cells, mitochondrial functions, producing oxidative stress. It causes immunological problems. That's all it says. Here's zearalenone. Zearalenone's more of an estrogen mimicker. Ochratoxin. Ochratoxin affects dopamine levels. And another one is MPA that I'm not going to get to, but it's just another immunosuppressant. And so recently, I found, it'll be in my next podcast, but I had a girl who's been really, 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 really sick, hasn't been to school all year, and we found four mycotoxins that are all immunosuppressive in different ways. Sometimes I find people with autoimmunity and we'll find that it was part of their history or it's, you know, part of their puzzle. And so we talk about the drivers, and it doesn't mean that any of those aren't relevant, that the foods aren't relevant. But mold can drive food sensitivities, and mold can drive overgrowth in the gut, which can drive food sensitivities, and mold can open up the gut and make it leaky. The second driver is stress or toxins, depending on how I list it. I usually, those are two and three. But mold drives mast cell activation, which is part of the stress response. Mold affects the pituitary, affects the stress hormones, and so affects the stress response in a myriad of different ways. And mold is a toxin, and it's a neurotoxin. So those are the drivers of autoimmunity. Number four is hormones. Mold affects hormone function, androgen function, estrogen, testosterone, and also, again, adrenal function. So I already mentioned that, pituitary function. And number five is hidden infections, and mold is often a hidden infection or part of biofilm-type infections. So when you talk about the five drivers of autoimmunity, mold can really do all of those. Again, it triggers the innate immune system, complement activation. It triggers the adaptive immune system. So I don't think that I need to continue talking any further, but just know that mold is super relevant to any autoimmune puzzle, and not everybody has autoimmunity. But some people with autoimmunity, mold was a factor or maybe still is a factor. So it's something worth looking into. So next episode is going to be about mold stories from my clinic. I got a zillion of them. So I'm going to take good notes so that I do not digress. But there are a lot of really fun ones. I got them grouped so far into kids and then into like some normal stories that like, you know, resolve pretty well, easily. And then I think crazy stories, which, you know, there's a myriad of all of those. So really, really cool. I'm really excited about next episode. Stay tuned. Follow us on Instagram. Give us a rating and a review too. I did not even harp on that at the beginning. So if you stuck around till the end, please give us a rating and a review. And we'll talk to you guys next time.